And welcome to Literary Lighting. We are here with another selection of book things
and reprobates.
Words from our mouths.
Yes.
Yes, Literary Lighting here on The Geek Show.
Yes. Your reprobates today are me, Rob.
Me, Andrew.
Me, Andy.
And me, Jordan.
Yes. We're going to get straight into things. So, beginning with Agatha Christie. So, apparently there's a code to cracking Agatha Christie's books. What's the code?
It's a very thought-through process, actually. They've actually hired people to actually work this out. And basically...
Hang on. Someone got paid a research grant for this?
Yeah, it says, experts believe they have worked out a formula to help reveal the killers in Agatha Christie's novels before Hercule Poirot or Jane Marple. And it's to mark the 125th anniversary of the birth of Christie.
Okay. So I'm looking at this formula.
So they've looked at 27 other books, which is including Death on the Nile and Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
And it says among their findings was that the killer was more likely to be male if the victim was strangled to death. They also discovered that there was a 75% chance the killer would be a woman if the book was set in the country house.
More importantly, they have actually got a formula worked out for
That's the thing. I'm looking at the formula. But the thing is, I don't see any absolute certainties in there. I thought I was able to just skip all of it and say, right, it was you.
You know, see, like it's a lot easier like on the TV detective. Shows because you just go, that guy's the celebrity guest star. He did it.
Yes, it is.
Same as Scooby-Doo, it was always the butler.
He might die. It depends on which character he is.
After someone's been killed.
Yeah, after someone's been killed.
The remaining celebrity guest did it.
In Scooby-Doo, it was either the businessman or the creepiest guy that done it.
No, it wasn't always.
It's always the most innocent person.
Yeah. Hmm. It's generally the person that... Scooby-Doo actually approached it quite well, to be honest. It was generally the person you least suspected.
Yeah, because the creepy guy was there to throw you off and make you think, oh, it's him because he's creepy.
Until the odd time where the creepy one was.
Yeah, which just, then
just
threw,
completely
you off.
Threw you off.
Yeah. So, in all honesty, Scooby-Doo approached the whole mystery thing quite well. But yeah, back to Agatha Christie. I don't like this. That basically said, the headline on the story is How to Spot Whodunit. Academics crack Agatha Christie's code. They say it with such certainty, and then I find out there's only a 75% chance that I'm right. And that's a 75% chance that the murderer will be female if the story is set in a country house. But there's usually several female characters, so which one is it?
So, do they not realise that all this time they spent working out this code, they could just get the books, skip to the back, and then you find out who the killer is?
Yeah. It's very simple. It's not rocket science.
It's basically, instead of more like a formula, it's more like a collection of sources, isn't it?
I've actually got a formula.
This does not look like... I've got the formula in front of me as well. This does not look like a formula. This looks like, you know those markings that they put on magic circles when they do witchcraft?
Yes.
That's what it looks like. I mean, look at it.
K, open brackets, R, S.
That's not R or S. Yeah. That's Rho Sigma.
Okay, just be careful, guys, because if you do say the full formula out loud, Cthulhu will be summoned into our realm.
Yes. I reckon that's what it is. Get all those Agatha Christie fans, the millions of Agatha Christie fans all over the world to say this in unison.
Do you think if
that was Agatha Christie's goal all along?
Yeah.
No. Do you think if they do that right, Agatha Christie
she was secretly
rise from the grave?
She was no. She was secretly the High Priestess of Cthulhu. That's what it is. This code was well hidden inside her works, and was only discovered recently by researchers. So yeah, I think that's the truth of it. I think we've stumbled on the truth of it.
We're on to you, Christy.
Yeah, which means we're going to have them after us. When this show goes out, finally, they're going to be chasing us.
Is that even more people to add against us then?
Yes.
It's okay, they can just...
the list grows.
We might just have a list of people that aren't against us.
No.
This could work out in our favour, because I feel like when the rest of the list sees, like, the giant non-Euclidean abomination lurching towards us, they'll just go, yeah, but we'll just leave it to that guy.
Yeah. Thing is, he's probably this massive lurching thing, and it's easy to avoid them.
Yeah, just walk slowly in the opposite direction.
No, you just got to make sure to sidestep to move to either side.
No, no, but if Prometheus has taught us one thing, it's that sidestepping is impossible.
Yeah, apparently on a flat on flat land with no real obstructions, it's impossible to sidestep. It happens in Prometheus. It must be true.
Yes.
Yeah, let's run away from it because it's not going to land on us if we run away from it. Let's not like run in a diagonal away from it or to the side. That's, where it's
even though
not
it's like literally a foot, you need to move.
Exactly. It's just kind of,
Prometheus.
So, yeah. Prometheus. Anyway, going to move on very quickly. We've only got a couple of news stories because it's a very slow news week.
It's such a very slow news week.
You know, Ai Weiwei, the controversial Chinese artist, who isn't very controversial here in the UK, but is highly controversial over in China, and was originally arrested under censorship charges, has finally been granted a visa to visit the UK after Theresa May intervened. He was originally refused a visa because apparently he had a conviction in China, which was totally not true, and just goes to show how much we don't like people visiting the country from overseas because we're afraid they'll stay. Britain, it's a nice country. Let's live here. I don't understand why the migrants all want to come here. Why do they want to come here? There's nothing here.
Because...
they don't know that until they come here. Then they can't leave.
No, I mean, it's the Dick Whittington syndrome, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, most people that's inside Britain want to leave Britain anyway, so...
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you guys a question. If you could live in Hawaii, if you could have a decent life in Hawaii, would you go?
Damn right.
You would.
What, and leave these emerald fields of my home?
You know, where we
yes.
have...
Yes, my God, yes. Can I go now?
Yes. Where we have these amazingly warm summers.
It's Hawaii.
No, I'm about...
It's
UK.
Hawaii. Think of beautiful women wearing bikinis and grass skirts, putting flowers on you, and treating you nicely.
Screw it, should we just go to Hawaii now?
We have flowers in England. We don't have any of those other things, but we have flowers.
Yeah. Unfortunately, some of them happen to be thistles. Yes.
Just lovely, just clumps of hogweed in your hair.
Yeah. But yes, anyway, Ai Weiwei has finally been granted a visa to enter the UK. And I actually, I applaud the Home Office for sorting this out.
Mm.
Yeah, it is. So it's a full 6 month visa to visit Britain, and they've sent him a written apology after Theresa May sent him a written apology after personally intervening with the case. So full credit to Theresa May for sorting that out. The artist was originally granted a visa for only 20 days after UK Home Office officials ruled that he had failed to disclose a criminal conviction on his application form. He was detained in China for 81 days in 2011, but was never charged with any offence. Mm. Basically, he was a typical kind of Chinese kind of, no, you're protesting against the government, so we must put you in jail for this period of time, basically, so we can break your spirit.
Yes, but we also can't just straight out admit that we're arresting you for criticising the government.
Yeah, it's kind of like what the Americans did with their when they started renditioning people. You're not allowed to criticise the American government, so we're going to kidnap you from your country. Yeah.
Just I suppose we haven't been renditioned yet.
Yeah, I know. I'm amazed at this. I am actually amazed. I just keep looking around and just waiting for someone from the CIA to turn up and go, hello, you know, we're going to take you away now.
Like, but my only theory is, like, the dark gods have told the Illuminati to tell the president, to tell the CIA that, no, they're dealing with this personally.
Oh, so you're going to say Obama's going to turn up going, what you say about me? Nothing, nothing, Barack. You know, we like you. It's the Republicans we don't like. Damn Republicans. Seriously, I don't like Republicans. I don't get them. I don't understand what they're about. So they're pro-gun, and they're pro-shooting people, and they're pro-death sentence. They're basically pro-all of the things that don't really fit with, like, normal civilized human behavior.
It's okay, because once all the criminals are dead, there'll be no more crime.
They'll turn on each
that
other.
Is basically what that ironically enough, that's exactly how the Republicans think.
Then like, I say that, but that is exactly like
then they'll turn on each other and then somebody else will be in power.
Yeah, but we have to wait for that. Can we not just educate America properly and teach them not to be Republicans?
There's a very slight issue, right, of what you just said there. Can we teach America?
No, can we educate them properly? Not teach America, just educate them properly. Because they can be taught. We're pretty sure of that.
Unless you're Donald Trump.
No. He's way past. He's way past learning. Not even tasty treats would help him.
I mean,
I like that one.
Just think the horrific future if in the next 5 or 10 years, right, the Prime Minister of this country was Boris Johnson.
I was worried where this was going.
You had the President of the United States, Donald Trump, stood next to each other.
No.
I was actually worried
where this was going because we'd just been talking about Donald Trump, and after all the conversations we've had about his hair, I was worried that, you know, it's going to be a horrible future. Donald Trump's hair is going to rule the world. Not Donald Trump, just his hair.
Donald Trump's hair controls him.
No. It's like, you know that Simpsons episode? I reckon it is exactly like Snake's hair.
Eventually all the like, reservoirs in the world just replaced with giant vats of Head and Shoulders.
Yes, basically. So, yes. So, Ai Weiwei, yes.
That's where we were originally.
Our tangents just get weirder, don't they? So, Ai Weiwei, he's coming to the country. Glad he's coming to the country, and I hope he has a great time in England. I hope he has a great time in Britain, and he goes around and does all the good touristy things. He's had a tough time in China. So I was about to say he had a tough time in America, but no, he's had a tough time in China, and yeah, glad to see him here. Glad he's here. Anyway, that was the news. Strangely, there is one more thing. There is one more thing.
Yes, news from the past.
Okay,
sort of. I assume Andy's going to do his thing, isn't he?
Yeah,
it's me now. This is from the time machine from 1998.
Yes.
George R. R. Martin.
Yes.
It was an interview in 1996, but the full Song of Ice and Fire series would be finished by 1998.
Really?
We said, don't hold your breath, because it might not happen after the interview.
Well, it might take him a couple of years more.
So, 17 years later. And you've got to ask, does it really take 17 years to... I mean, what book was he up to in 1996? Please don't say the third book, because
it'll only be the second one, I bet. That's why it'll be.
It'll probably be the second one.
It's only the second one.
A Clash of Kings.
Yeah, so the second book. Yeah. So he'd basically written the second book, and this is an interview after the release of the second book. So in 17 years, how many books are there now? Six?
No, five.
Seven. Five.
Well, we are waiting for the sixth.
Okay, so in 17 years...
Technically, it's sort of sixth, because the third one gets split up into... two parts sometimes.
Okay. But generally it's one.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just count it as one. So, and the sixth one is coming out very soon, I think.
Ish.
It's coming out this year, isn't it?
Maybe.
Okay. So
I don't think we can make any promises when George R. R. Martin is concerned.
Yeah, his timekeeping's not that good.
We'll find out at the end of the book.
So basically, in 17 years, he's released three books. That's one book every 5 years. Come on, George. Robert Jordan was doing much better than that. Even after he died.
It was a lot of planning. Must have been.
Thanks to Brandon Sanderson, Robert Jordan was still releasing like a book every couple of years.
Well, you got
to
think.
It's only to point that out to him that like currently you write slower than a guy who is dead.
Yes, basically yes.
I think this last book has to be good. I think if he's been planning it.
The thing is, I agree. But I mean, the thing is, the Wheel of Time series is just as complex and just as deep as anything that George R. R. Martin has written. It really is. It's not in the same vein when it comes to the political side of things, but in terms of the number of characters, I'd say the Wheel of Time probably has a more diverse array of characters. So yeah.
But I think it's after all this is finished as well, though. You're basically going to see the end of the TV series before the books. And they're working off blueprints, so...
Not anymore, they ain't. There's big deviations now, isn't there? There's
cut out loads of stuff.
The storyline in the TV series is deviating wildly from the book. I mean, just there's bits that aren't in the TV series, and there's bits from the TV series that just aren't in the books. Mm. Yeah. So yeah. So yes, 1998 was when Game of Thrones should have finished.
I think probably in some weird like parallel universe it did finish in 1998,
only it just wasn't as good.
No,
it just felt a bit rushed.
That's what we really think. If only you'd had 17 more years to work on this.
Yes, if only. Imagine if that was the case and he complained, I needed more time. Maybe if I'd had like 17 more years to work on this.
Just remember though, he's working on one now, so you should see it soon.
Hopefully. But remember, he did say the series was going to be finished by 1998.
Yes. He's right, though. Don't
so when it took him like 5 years to write.
Yeah, so when he says the next book is due out in October, expect it in January 2017.
I thought he was going to say 2078 then.
Are you lost now?
I said, but don't hold your breath.
Yes.
Because if I would have held my breath, I wouldn't be here now.
Yes, you'd be dead. holding your breath for 17 years is not a good thing. Right, anyway, just one final bit. You know, the Fringe comes around every year, and there's loads of shows on. There's one that caught our eye in particular. It's James Wilson Taylor's show at the Edinburgh Fringe. The comedian behind the Batfan has shared some essential advice that he's learned from the Dark Knight's exploits, and he's written a piece for The Guardian, which I'm just going to read from because this is 10 things he learned from Batman, right? And I think these are very, very, very
lessons we can all live by.
Yeah, lessons you can all live by. Number one, never attend a fancy charity benefit party. Chances are a costume criminal will crash it halfway through and throw your girlfriend out of a 10-story window.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Number two, never use guns. Do more humane things with criminals like break their limbs and throw them into a tub of acid. Number three, the best way to fix a broken back is by doing topless push-ups. Just ask Christian Bale in The Dark Knight Rises. Number four, a strong jawline is a valuable asset. A strong jawline is a valuable asset. I use mine to cut cheese and open beer bottles. Number five, always carry a variety of sprays in your utility belt to ward off criminals. Anti-shark spray, anti-death spray, anti-spray spray, etc.
I love that anti-spray spray, to be brutally honest.
Yeah. Number seven, what was it, six? I can't remember which one I'm up to. Six or seven. One or the other.
Number
next one. if you turn an image of a skyscraper on its side while holding a rope, you will look like you are climbing up a building. Perfect when on a Fringe budget.
Wait, is he trying to say that in the original Batman series, they weren't actually scaling skyscrapers?
No.
Well, that's about my child.
My mind is blown.
Number next one. Yeah. Always disguise your voice, your real voice in public, even when talking to yourself.
I'm sure that's the first sign of madness.
Mm. Yeah. Number B. Kiss from a Rose by Seal is the most romantic song of all time.
Which I don't think we can argue with that.
Yeah. Number left shoe. When...
It's getting a bit bizarre now, Rob.
When hiring a sidekick, make sure they have a decent ability to repeat plot points, spout random puns, and get injured instead of you.
I'm sorry, Robin.
That's why we have Andy on the show.
Yep. And if Andy fails, we've always got John.
John fails every year.
Okay, there's going to be a fight between you two at some point, isn't there?
I just get him when no one's looking.
Okay, right. Number polar bear. Most importantly, never reveal your secret identity. No one knows that Batman is Bruce Wayne well, except Robin, Alfred the Butler, Superman, Lois Lane, Harold the Mute Mechanic who works in the Batcave, Sherlock Holmes, the Riddler, President JFK. Actually, scratch that one. And
that's the one thing I've never got about Batman.
Hey?
That's the one thing I've never got about Batman, where everybody knows who he is.
Well, it's not like Iron Man, is it, right? Where he actually announces that he is Iron Man.
Yes. And finally, number final, James Wilson Taylor's Batfan. That's what this is all from. Right?
Yeah. Well, recently found that article I'm using.
Well, it's very Dave Gorman-esque, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
So,
and also, it seems like he actually knows quite a bit about Batman.
He's done his research.
Yes. I'd like to see his take on The Incredible Hulk, given what we've read earlier. Right, okay. We've got no reviews this week, so how about a book you like? Pick a book you like. Let's talk about that.
Okay. I want to talk about More by Terry Pratchett.
Okay, good call.
I think that's probably my favourite Discworld book.
Just the fact that he's called Mort, which is short for Mortimer, but also means death. I thought that was that was quite clever.
Yeah, that was a really clever joke. Just I really liked the idea that, like, you can phase through walls by becoming more real.
Yeah.
And just forgetting the wall is supposed to exist. Like, all of it is one of those things I have tried to do in my house occasionally.
I just love the fact that death, you know, death can murder a curry. Mort says, you know, what's curry taste like? Have you ever bitten into a red hot ice cube? And the thing is, when you think about it, it is quite an appropriate description,
like,
of curry.
Description of curry. Yeah, Mort, for anyone who hasn't read it, it's set in Terry Pratchett's Discworld, and basically Death, it was like the Grim Reaper of the Discworld, decides he's going to take an apprentice and chooses Mort, who's like just, basically he's kind of like a farm boy, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he's got, I think part of why, one of the reasons I like Mort is because it had that very, it had that kind of, you know, 70s David Eddings Pawn of Prophecy type thing. You know, oh, he is the chosen one. He is just this normal farm boy from the middle of nowhere, and he has been chosen as the chosen one. And then he's like, well, no, he hasn't.
Yeah, he's just like an apprentice.
Yeah. He's just an apprentice, and it's just kind of, yeah.
That's because he gets sent off by his parents to go learn a craft.
What was it? His clothes bring a new terror to poverty. I like. It's just full of great one-liners, though.
It really is. Plus, like, I do just love the end. But, like, this, like, no, not goodbye, au revoir.
Yeah. I love it when, you know, when Death's daughter and Mort are arguing with each other and calling each other names. And Mort says to her, "Your eyes are like juggly eggs."
Yes.
Like, what's juggly mean? Oh, you know, they're kind of runny and manky at the same time, like the eggs that Albert cooks. And it's like, oh right, yeah, that's a good word. And then just launch straight back into insulting each other.
But yeah, they have such a great back and forth.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, they kind of telegraphed it that they were going to end up as a married couple, but it was just funny seeing how they got to that point.
Yeah, just see them actually bicker like a married couple.
Yep. I can't fault you at all with Mort. I think Mort is wonderful.
Plus, I think it's like one of my favorite bits of Discworld, the idea that Death, actually, like, he wants to be human and, like, experience all these things that people do.
Well, he got that in the next Death book. Reaper Man, didn't he?
Yeah, because I mean, it's like, it's kind of the common plot thread throughout all the Death books.
I just love Death's line in Reaper Man when he's saying to Albert, "I have time now, Albert. I have time." And Albert goes, "Well, what are you going to do with this time?" "I'm going to spend it." It's just genius. And when he falls asleep for the first time, he's like, "So this is what sleeping is." You just suddenly lose like several hours of your life to nothing.
Pretty much like Facebook.
Yeah, it's pretty inefficient. I love all of the books with Death in.
Yeah, he's definitely my favourite Discworld character.
Yeah, I love his stint with the French Foreign Legion. That was genius. Yeah, just kind of, you know, private, what was it, cotton, hand wash only. Because he's forgotten his name. It's the place where people go to forget, thing with the head, you know, thing with the past and the head. Forget, that's it. what's my name? Private Cotton, private hand wash only. All he's doing is reading the label on the back of his shirt. Because he can't actually remember his own name. So, yeah. Oh, God, I miss him.
And then the time he goes to a bar and just drinks all the alcohol because he can't get drunk.
Yeah. but unfortunately, as Mort is becoming more real, death is becoming less real. So the alcohol starts affecting him.
Yes.
But, yeah, I love Death of Rats as well. Death of Rats is amazing.
Which one's Death of Rats?
Death of Rats in Reaper Man when the new death appears.
Yes.
And you know, there's like two deaths. There's one of the deaths that holds on for dear life so as not to become part of the original death again. It's Death of Rats, and Death of Rats is just like a tiny rat in, you know, with like the hooded cowl and everything like that, and
a little tiny scythe,
and he's the death of small furry things. And he's also got the death of fleas, who also managed to escape. And the death of fleas is even tinier and sits on the death of rats.
To me, this sounds so random.
It is totally. It's just genius.
It sounds like something you're just thinking up of stuff on the spot. I mean,
we're not.
No, we could never come up with something this incredible.
Let's put it this way: you need to read Discworld. That's it. I've got nothing else to add to that.
Well, that's an objective fact.
Yes. I think they should teach Discworld in schools.
Yes. I mean, I'm not going to say that if you haven't read Discworld, you're less of a person. But yes, I'm saying that exact thing.
I can't fault you on this at all. Yes. Mort is a good choice. What about you, Andy?
Well, I've got one in particular, actually. You know how I love my video game novelizations.
Yes.
There was one I read a few years ago. It was based on the video game Splinter Cell.
Okay.
It's called Splinter Cell. And
a creative name.
It's like an original book.
Really? I never would have guessed.
It's not based on...
It's based on the series called Splinter Cell. And it's called Splinter Cell.
Came out with the game. It was like... to like accompany it. But it was a totally unique story. And I paid 99 pence for it.
It was a totally unique story. $1.99
delivery.
Did it have the same characters?
It was an original story.
It's supposed to be a prequel to the game.
Prequel to the game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
It's set after it. Is it?
But it's also a prequel.
But it has what I noticed. It's got this basic plot where it's terrorists with nuclear weapons and he has to sneak in and. You know, basically like the game.
Really?
But it's got this subplot where his daughter gets kidnapped by the same terrorist. So, while she's in a foreign country, studying, and he has to go and kill the terrorists and get his daughter back.
Isn't this kind of Under Siege and Taken, Under Siege 2 and Taken at the same time?
And when I'm reading it, I'm going, this is Taken.
Yeah, it's Under Siege 2 and Taken.
It was an original plot, though.
Yeah, because it was 2004.
Oh, before Taken.
Yeah.
So Taken is just a Splinter Cell.
Yes. Makes you think, though, doesn't it? But at the end, he does have help from his,
his CIA buddy, Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson wandering around the Middle East, kicking in doors, going, "Where is she?"
That's
the wrong movie, isn't it? That's Batman the Dark Knight.
Mind you, if they ever made a film of Splinter Cell like that, right, you could actually Liam Neeson inside it, though.
They are making.
Inside what?
In the film of Splinter Cell.
No, they're making a film.
What, playing the main role? No, I couldn't see him playing the main role.
Do you know who's playing the main role? Tom Hardy.
In the Splinter Cell movie?
Yeah.
He's getting absolutely everywhere at the moment.
Yes, he is.
He's actually under the table right now.
We're not going down that road again.
I recommend it, though. I do recommend it. It's very short.
It's been cancelled, which makes it even more entertaining.
Oh.
It's only like a short book.
Yeah.
Basically, you probably read it in like 10 minutes.
When you say that, how fast do you think I read?
Tremendously fast that you could read.
More importantly, if he thinks it's only going to take 10 minutes to do it, how big's the book?
That's what I'm worried about. I mean, that even I wouldn't be able to manage that in 10 minutes.
It's about 700.
Oh, 700 pages in 10 minutes. I'm not a bloody Superman. Do you think I'm just kind of some kind of mobile scanner that remembers everything?
Is it a paperback?
Through it quickly.
I haven't read any of the others. But,
the book is 368 pages.
Well. That's it then.
Yeah, that's still good.
But there is something like eight of them now.
A few hours.
Apparently, the second one continues straight on, which I do actually have a second one. I just haven't read it yet.
You know, I know I'm an impressive piece of humanity, but, you know.
Way to big your ego up there, like.
It was clearly a joke. So, yeah, could you not tell by the fact that even I'm laughing at what I just said? Oh, come on, Jordan.
I'm miles away, leave me alone.
But, yeah, I remember because...
He's on Facebook again, isn't he?
My Facebook's not working at the moment.
If you like...
It's turned up saying my username.
If you like your Taken mixed with your Splinter Cell Metal Gear Solid
Under Siege SPN, 2.
Yeah.
If you like your Steven Seagal movies.
They actually translate well as book form, though.
If there was a book where, like, Sam Fisher, whoever Liam Neeson was in Taken, and just all the generic Steven Seagal characters teamed up, I'd read that.
Yeah.
Steven Seagal is kind of epitomized in like just a single Steven Seagal.
I was going to say there is. I'm pretty sure there is a movie like that, and I'm pretty sure it was called The Expendables. Was it?
And don't forget the film that was exactly the same: Expendables 2 and Expendables 3.
See, by the third one, it was no longer Expendables; it was more like Expendables.
Well, then...
Yeah. Anyway, should we get back to topic?
I'm keeping quiet out of that because I love them films, so...
What? You like Expendables 3?
It's a good job.
No, not number 3.
I was going to say...
Not number 3.
I was going to say, even Rob was looking over with... Anyway, Jordan, what book are you going for?
I'm going for Edge of Destiny.
What's Edge of Destiny?
Edge of Destiny is some gamers will be aware of a game called Guild Wars.
Yep.
This is based between the first book and the second book.
First book and second book? I thought Guild Wars was a game. Why are we suddenly talking about Guild Wars books? What's going on?
There is more than one book for Guild Wars, actually. So.
Well, I've noticed that about MMOs in particular, that they have... that. More so than, say, Splinter Cell, MMOs tend to get a lot of kind of novelization treatments.
Yeah, I guess that's because it's like more just an entire world than a single storyline, so there's more scope to write.
Well, the thing is with the actual game is you have...
You've got a lot of flavor text with the game,
you've got your own character's story, and you've also got the massive MMO online, like the best of MMO part of it.
Yeah. Do you know what's interesting for that sort of thing? There was an EVE book that came out, EVE Online.
Yes.
Which was all about stories from the EVE universe, mm-hmm. but it wasn't stories from, you know, that CCP had written as part of the whole world building of the EVE universe. These were stories from the players themselves. These were the stories of their exploits in the EVE universe.
Ah. So surely it was just stories of a bunch of guys sitting around doing accountancy then.
Sometimes, yeah. But I think but more often than not, there were stories about treachery, betrayal, piracy.
There have been, like, I've seen articles online of just incredible epic acts of just sheer trolling people can do on EVE Online.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's one guy. You played Guild Wars, have you played World of Warcraft?
Not World of Warcraft.
Okay, do you know the Goons?
Yes.
Okay, Goons I'm pretty sure are in Guild Wars as well, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Right, Goon Swarm is basically a bunch of players who get together and basically troll. That's what they mainly do. Anyway, one of the players in EVE, he got what's known as ganked by Goon Swarm. He got killed, and he, because his escape pod didn't get away quick enough. He got, actually got properly killed, lost all his implants, everything like that. Because the characters in Eve, basically you run a clone and the clone flies the ship, and the clone is connected to the ship using various implants to help enhance their piloting abilities. So basically, yeah, he lost all of it. And so he wasn't happy about that. So he disappeared for a short period of time. Then he came back and he joined the goons. And he spent the next few years working his way up patiently up through the ranks in the goons until he became the leader of all of Goonswarm. And then at that point, he basically waited a certain amount of time, emptied all of their accounts, it took all of their resources, and effectively disbanded the entire alliance.
Yes.
That's a great story.
I have heard about that, but...
It was one of the biggest acts of revenge we've seen in a video game ever. I mean, this guy spent a total of about 4 or 5 years just on this one thing.
Just to mess with people who screwed him over in a video game.
Yeah, and now that's dedication. That's a guy you don't cross.
And that's what you'd put. I mean, if all a good feeling.
No. If he's done that to people in a video game, imagine what happens if you don't pass him the salt when he asks.
Probably nothing, because he's like scrawny and malnourished from the years he spent inside doing nothing but playing Eve.
Yeah. Either that, or he'll just try, or he'll launch himself at you and try and chew your leg off, because that might be the only strong part of his body left.
Yeah. See, he's now just basically a rabid coyote.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway, Guild Wars book.
Sorry,
set between the first and second book. Sorry.
Between games.
Yeah, between
the first and second book.
Yes.
Not massively long. First six chapters are basically introducing the characters. Each character has their own storyline, and then gradually throughout the book they all become basically a team to actually answer the call of the Destiny's Edge.
Yeah.
So they're like some sort of Guild.
Yeah.
The clue isn't in the title, is it?
Is the war on?
Do these books tend to be well written, or are they just kind of...
They go. They do go into quite a bit of detail, especially not for the actual characters environments of it.
When you're talking about detail, does familiarity with the game actually help?
Yeah.
Okay.
At the beginning of Edge of Destiny, they actually give you a map of what the old Guild Wars map used to look like. And you can actually match around exactly where you're supposed to be.
So if you played the game, you have a distinct advantage when you're reading the book.
But even if you don't know the game, they actually give you the map.
I mean, ignore the map. If you didn't have the map, how would it be without the map if you'd never played Guild Wars?
It'd still be able to make sense.
Okay.
Because it's... The detail they go into when they're talking about the environment,
okay,
and stuff like that, it makes you want to play the game anyway, even if you haven't.
Okay,
so I would assume this kind of book is predominantly aimed at Guild Wars players, though.
Not really, because it's one of them things. Even if you don't know the game, the book is, even though it is set between the first two, like the games, you can just read the book, right, and understand everything about it.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you are a fan, are the kind of things you can pick up and go like, oh, I know that. That's kind of cool.
Would you be motivated to buy it, though, if you weren't a fan? Or would you buy it because you like the game?
Even if you weren't a fan of the game. Like that. Even if you just enjoy reading, it's one of them things. You could take out the entire game element and just read it as a book.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing about it, because even if you do play the game, you can read it and actually go, actually, I know exactly where that bit is. Like that. So you can go through like that.
Okay. Right, so my turn. It's a tough one. I've read like tons and 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 tons of books. But I'm going to go with I am going to talk about a series rather than a single book. And it's unusual because back when I was a kid, there was loads of series of, you know, fantasy series, everything like that, just like there is now. But in terms of the kids' stuff, there were only a few that you could read. It was either the Chronicles of Narnia, you know, or you know Duncan Wood or whatever it was called, and various things like that. You know, very little in the way of actual proper fantasy. One of the first books I ever read as a fantasy novel was The Black Cauldron. which Disney then turned into a cartoon later on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it got me into the Chronicles of Prydain, which is 5 books written by Lloyd Alexander. And that basically was, I still have them kicking around the house somewhere, the paperbacks. I was just kind of, I was astounded by just how complex this world was without actually being overly complex in the way that Lord of the Rings was. You know,
just, yeah, well, it's not like stopping every 5 minutes to go, and here's a song in Elvish.
Yes. So yeah, I was surprised by, at how interesting this world was. There's 5 books in the series. There's the Book of Three, The Black Cauldron, The Castle of Lur, Taran Wanderer, and The High King. And the Book of Three being the first book, it basically, the story is that the pronunciation's changed since I've learned that how I was pronouncing them wasn't correct. Taran obviously is correct, and I think Ailonwy is the correct pronunciation. But these are very much kind of Welsh names, you know, very much Welsh names.
Yeah, they do sound very Welsh. Mm.
Well, it has you know, the Land of Death, which was written as Anuvin, but I know it's pronounced Anuin, and they had Aron, the Death Lord or the Lord of Death. Who is actually, I think that's the correct pronunciation. It's either that or Araun. You know, they had Gwydion as, you know, the main prince, and Gwydion is a character in kind of Welsh mythology and Celtic mythology as well, if I recall. It was very much kind of based in folklore, mythology, that sort of thing, but took it and made its own world and its own thing. And yeah, I even had Taliesin in there from Arthurian mythology, and it had the very Arthurian feel to it as well. It was very much a mixture of mythologies, folklores, that sort of thing. Really worked. Book of Three was kind of, it was the start with the Horned King that was in the Black, was in the Disney cartoon, The Black Cauldron.
AKA the face of every child's nightmare.
Yeah. The thing is, he wasn't the main enemy in The Black Cauldron. The Black Cauldron was a different story entirely. In The Black Cauldron, so he was the main enemy in the Book of Three. He was basically a subordinate of Aron, whatever you want to call him, in the Book of Three. And then in The Black Cauldron, basically Araun had basically got hold of the cauldron that broke the boundary between life and death. It basically raised the dead. And he'd basically got that from Orwen, Orthu, and Orgoch, who lived in the swamps. And they were basically the witches that also represented, like, the three fates. And Taran, they have a pig called Henwen, who is kind of an oracular pig. That's actually part of the story. And Henwen predicted what was going to happen and basically ran away. So Taran goes chasing after her. And along the way, they meet Gurgi and everything like that. And then at the end, you know, there's all that, there's various things. Thing is, the Black Cauldron isn't destroyed in the way that they think, because there's actually, in the book, there's a council of warriors meet at Caer Dolbyn with the Sorcerer Dolbyn to basically plan how they're going to attack the Land of the Dead to destroy the Cauldron. And there's a young prince who basically, he's got nothing except his title. He doesn't have any land, any power, nothing like that. And he's the one who ultimately destroys the cauldron in the only way that the cauldron can be destroyed, which is exactly the same as the way the cauldron can be destroyed in the cartoon.
Oh, to throw yourself into it and sacrifice yourself.
Basically, he's half dead by that point anyway. It's his last act of redemption, because he's been a real idiot up to that point, and he doesn't understand until right at the very end. It's much darker than the Chronicles of Narnia were.
Yeah, I was about to say, it sounds pretty dark.
Yeah, it's much darker than the Chronicles of Narnia were. The Castle of Lur, obviously, that's when Taran starts realizing he has feelings for Ailonwy, or Ailonwy. Taran Wanderer is where he actually goes off on his own to try and find out who his parents are, you know, what's his lineage, where does he come from, because he's just an orphan. And the High King is where it is basically the last fight. It's basically the last of all the fights. So, yeah.
I mean, that's interesting. It's like, I always loved the Black Cauldron film when I was a kid.
Should it's read the Chronicles know, of Prydain.
Yeah, there's like this whole book series about it.
Hmm. Yeah, you should read the Chronicles of Prydain. It's very, very good, but also kind of difficult to get hold of these days. Hmm. It's really simple to read, really easy to read, but it just had this edge to it that I hadn't read in anything else up to that point. I remember reading it the first time and thinking, my God, what have I been missing? Seriously.
This is what good books are.
Yeah, basically it was that kind of thing. Never look back. It was the first fantasy novel I ever read, and I never looked back. I've read some absolute clunkers when it comes to fantasy and science fiction. I have read some abysmally bad things. You have no idea. You weren't there, man. You weren't there.
You're loving that today, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. You're having so many Narm flashbacks.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. I was in Narm. Do you know what it is? I was watching From Dusk Till Dawn. And you know the crazed combat veteran from Dusk Till Dawn. It was in Narm back in 72. It's that.
The fact that you've read all these books makes me even more confident you can read a book really fast.
That's Rob's line. He doesn't actually read. He just kind of picks up books, stares at them for a second. And just
No. I dismantle my jaw, drop it in, close my jaw, just jump around a bit, go, and then just take it out again after, because it's got no words left. They've all been absorbed by me. It's just blank pages.
See, now I think I might need to give you Magician back then.
No, I've read Magician so many times. I could pretty much, I can tell you most of the story of Magician right now.
Well, you probably have to, because it'll have no words in it.
No, it's got words in it. That one came from my brother's house. My copy has no words in.
Oh, that's okay. Like the insides of your stomach actually just lined with like all the pages of Magician.
No, just the words, yeah. Not the pages. There's no pages in there. It's just
okay.
Words.
Just like the word just scarred into your belly.
No, it's all just ink.
The funny of it would have been his face if he went to read the book.
You know that Brendan Fraser movie Inkheart. Well, if it was a movie about me, it'd be Ink Stomach. I am like a squid. I hide in a cloud of ink, just like any good politician.
You can't take politics. You can't like separate them, can you? Yours.
What, from squids? No, you can't. You can't. They've got tentacles everywhere.
You can't have a show.
Everywhere, man. Everywhere.
You can't have a show.
All Japanese schoolgirls will attest to.
Yes.
You can't have a show without mentioning.
Oh, right. Okay. Weren't we going to do Penguin stuff? Oh, Beatrix Potter stuff, I think.
Beatrix Potter stuff.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, enough of the books. Let's move on to something entertaining. Which Beatrix Potter character are you? So,
yes.
Guys, which character are you?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Let's find out.
Right.
Also, just to warn you, if I get Thumbelina, I'm flipping a table.
Yes. How would most people describe you? Are you A, peaceful and caring, B, mischievous and adventurous, C, determined and hardworking, or D, entertaining and playful?
I think we can immediately cross out the first one for every single one of us.
Yeah.
I think I have to go mischievous and adventurous.
You wish.
I'd say mischievous and new boy.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Do you want
Can't
to put that to the test?
Can't you press them all? Can't you click them all?
No, you can only pick one.
I shall go for determined and hardworking.
Yeah, I think determined and hardworking for me as well.
See, that proves that I'm more mischievous than you, because if that was you, right, you'd have went for it.
I'd probably be the same.
No, I'm being honest.
So am I.
All I'm saying is mischievous. I've got like... How old are you now, Jordan?
24.
I've got 13 years more... on you.
It's got nothing to do with that.
It does.
Does. George R. R. Martin writing period's worth.
Yes, exactly. Where would you most like to live? In a cozy house, a busy farm, a secretive underground den? That's me. or an island?
I have the den. I'm taking the island.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the den or the island. I'd love to live on an island.
Yeah, but the thing is, the island, but the den has the word secretive.
It does, doesn't it? That's what it is.
Just as the word underground,
has to be,
though.
Exactly. But
has
you know,
it
caters to my supervillain tendencies.
If you choose the secret of underground den, right, that's basically going to turn you into a womble.
You can have all of them, though, can you?
No, it doesn't, because I'm a supervillain. And all supervillains are determined and hardworking. It's been proven. You don't build a death ray you can't build a death ray out of nothing. You know, you need funds. You need to work hard. You need to save up, man.
Secret underground.
These things don't just build themselves.
Rob.
Hey?
It's secret underground den on an island. Where's that number?
But like a cozy house and a
underground
farm. Well, you said you could have all of them. So like you need to band them all together.
Okay, number three. You want to see your friends. What do you do with them?
Well, there's a bit personal question.
I object to the assumption that I have friends.
Yeah. Go out for a big fancy dinner. Have a lovely cup of tea and a chat. Host a big entertaining party where you tell lots of riddles and stories. Thank go God around to their house. You don't want to be the host. Host a big party.
It's got to be. That would be the fourth one.
I'll go around to their house. I'm not hosting anything.
Well, I'll be the host and you guys can come around.
Yay.
You're the host now.
Okay, exactly.
Yeah, go to their house then.
Do you know what that is? That's basically my culture speaking there. Being Asian, I have to be the host. I have to be the one who is hospitable.
Ooh, the next one.
Okay, what's the next one?
Your friendship group problem, how do you solve it?
Sorry,
Your friendship group has a problem, how do you solve it? And shoot them is an honour.
Damn it!
Okay, so work with everyone to solve the issue, planning your actions thoroughly.
It's planning actions!
Yes. Rebel against the source of the problem without thinking about the consequences.
Yes.
So, basically, Star Wars. Look after everyone in a parental fashion. Don't listen to anyone else's advice and do what you think is best.
I don't. What was option five? Laugh. Just laugh at all of them and their problems.
Yes. I think rebel against the source of the problem. Without thinking.
I'm going to go for good old don't listen to anyone's advice. Because other people are idiots and I'm the only competent one.
I went rebel.
Yeah. Right. Number five, what would be your ideal job? An entertainer, a teacher, an explorer, or running your own business? It's got to be the last one for me.
These three options, or this thing what you already do?
Yes, no.
I don't know for that one.
Well, I guess entertainer, since that's hopefully what we're doing now.
I'm an entertainer.
Number six, what are you most likely to be found doing?
Well,
it's like how all four of us had the exact same thought.
No, not that.
Shouldn't move away from that question rather quickly.
Experience what are you most likely to be found doing? Experiencing mishaps but cleverly finding your way out of them, working hard at the latest task you have set your mind to. Looking after people and helping them with their problems, or dancing and singing.
I've put the first one for that one.
Clearly dancing and singing.
Mine's definitely the first one.
I guess the second one.
Okay, number seven. Which animal would be your sworn enemy?
There's no sheep.
An owl, a cat, a fox. You don't have any enemies. You get on with everybody. Where is the rabbit? I don't trust rabbits.
I don't know, but that's okay, because cats are already my sworn enemies.
I like cats. I like owls, and I like foxes. I've got to go with the last one.
That's unfair. That, yeah, you're going to be said an owl because the turn doesn't like anybody.
Well, I like cats are fine. Cats are fine as a supervillain pet. We know this.
Yeah,
it's established.
Every single
just remember, the cat will betray you when
the
time comes.
Wouldn't you say
comes?
The owl,
though? No, the owl's a good supervillain pet.
Because everything that
can
turn its head 360 is exorcist-y.
No, the owls are good supervillain pets as well. And foxes, hey, it's a fox.
Yeah.
It wants its own back on all those rich people who chased it down and destroyed its home. It's a mad fox.
I think killed his family. They destroyed his home.
The new
and
George,
now he's
no,
back
no,
for vengeance.
No, the new George Miller film, Mad Fox.
I don't know which one to choose now for that. That's a bit harsh.
Fury Run. Anyway, moving on. Number eight, what is your best feature? Your curiosity and sense of adventure, your wisdom, your ability to entertain everyone,
yes.
Your very caring nature.
Yes, my caring nature. I care so deeply about everyone.
Your wisdom,
yeah. Number nine, which of these would you prefer to eat? Vegetables, nuts, cereals, or biscuits? biscuits, it's got to be. And who would you most like to be allies with? A dog, a fox, humans, or your own?
Yeah, there's no cat.
Your own animal family.
What is that? What does that mean?
Is that like having Pokemon with you?
No.
This one, hell yeah, that one.
No. It makes it sound more like the island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
Your own animal family.
That would be mint if one of them was a Pokemon.
I think it's going to have to be humans. The top of the food chain, you know, they've got opposable thumbs. It's going to have to be there.
It's going to have to be in that.
No, submit your
answer. Have you noticed I'm answering this in the way a supervillain would? Yes. Which Beatrix Potter character are you? Apparently, I am Miss Tiggy Winkle the Hedgehog.
Anderson?
I am page loading.
Who are you, John?
I'm she.
I'm Peter Rabbit.
You're Peter Rabbit?
Yeah, I get to join the Tiggy Winkle Club.
Oh, one of these things is not like the other.
So Miss Tiggy Winkle was a supervillain.
Yes, Miss Tiggy Winkle was a supervillain. There you have it.
In the group to deal with.
Right.
We're at the end of the show, but there you have it, folks. Proof positive, Miss Tiggy Winkle was a supervillain. Beatrix Potter, yeah, I bet she didn't expect that. But there you have it. Anyway, we have been Literary Loitering.
Yes,
I've been Andrew.
I've been Andy.
I've been Jordan.
And I've been Rob. We'll see you all next week with more fun and games in the world of books and... Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Right. See you all later.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.